Welcome to this podcast from Third Flatiron Publishing in Boulder, Colorado, and Ayr, Scotland. Today we're presenting Changing of the Guard, an angelic tale by Taylor Dye. The author says he was inspired by the old TV program Touched by an Angel, a favorite of his mother's. Taylor Dye lives in the U.S. and has written four novels, including the Intermediaries series, which feature our main characters, Beat and Case, a couple of apparent street urchins who are up to good. See the author interview with this podcast. You can find out more at Taylor's website, salmonedna.com. This story first appeared in the Third Flatiron anthology, Rhapsody of the Spheres. For more from Third Flatiron, check out our website at thirdflatiron.com and subscribe to our podcasts. You can support our podcasts at patreon.com/thirdflatiron. And now, let's listen to Changing of the Guard, read by Inken Purvis.
Changing of the Guard by Taylor Dye. Two kids, seemingly no older than 13, they stroll down a cobblestone residential sidewalk in the between hours of sunset and darkness. The street that runs alongside them is devoid of traffic, and as such, the neighborhood children stake their claim to the road amidst their own activities. Hopscotch, jump rope, an improvised baseball game with a chalked-out X, a spare glove, a trash can lid, and a storm drain standing in as the bases. The children are all busy with their diversions. They hardly pay any mind to the unfamiliar amblers. The two of them are dressed in similar fashion, as long-lasting pairs often are. For this occasion, they take on the appearance of the dispossessed. Down-at-heel boots and scruffy pants slightly torn, plain unbranded shirts under dirtied overcoats, worn scarves and faded winter caps. Though the children playing in the street sport clothing of slightly higher quality, the pair on the sidewalk draw no attention to themselves. It would be of little consequence to them, however. They prefer their unaffected style. "So what's the problem?" Case asks, perplexed. "There is no problem," Beat answers. "Then what are we talking about?" "I don't know. You tell me." "Oh, here we go again," Case exhales, rolling his eyes. "I'm sorry." "You always do this, Beat." "I know. Isn't it fun?" "Hilarious, Beat." Thunder grumbles in the distance. The other kids are too involved in their games to hear it. It isn't directed at them anyway. Beat giggles, her laugh almost musical. Case glances up to the sky. "Looks like rain," he mutters. Beat looks over to him and grins. It's mischievous. "More like, deary me, it sounds as though the boss is displeased with the unnecessarily flippant remark that was directed at my very bestest friend in the whole wide world. My sincerest apologies, Beat." Case smiles and pulls Beat's knitted cap over her eyes. "My sincerest apologies, Beat. Why, I appreciate it, kind sir." They continue on, and the sky grows dark enough for the streetlights to flicker on. Directly in their path, however, one lamp has long since burned out, now providing only a darkened circle in an otherwise glowing urban playground. A single child stares up at the lamp while sucking her thumb and clutching her scruffy doll by the leg, its head resting on the pavement. Nearing the unlit area, Case gazes up at the lamp and nods, as if acknowledging its presence. The streetlight blinks on. The small child is bathed in an orange-tinged fluorescent glow and pulls her thumb out of her mouth, spreading her arms wide, seemingly attempting to grasp as much of the light as her tiny arms could carry. Why the light suddenly decided to shine is of no importance to the girl, only that before it wasn't and now it is. Her doll waves in the air as the girl twirls in the lightened circle. Beat, seeing, and even more than that, sensing, the small girl's innocent and newfound delight, hops off the sidewalk and begins spinning with the child. Beat's hair, flowing out from underneath her cap, dances around her face as she twirls, emulating the wavy movements of the child's doll. Case, still on the sidewalk, smiles. Later, after the kids on the street have been ushered into their homes by their caregivers, Beat and Case arrive at their destination, an unassuming brownstone, not unlike the others that line both sides of the street. Clear sky is showing the final remnants of twilight, and a plethora of stars and galaxies sparkle overhead, clearly visible despite the well-lit neighborhood. Porch light burns bright beside the entrance to the brownstone, welcoming any evening visitors. Beat tries to catch a glimpse through a ground-floor window while Kay surveys the multi-level residence. Thoughts? Beat asks as she peeks through the glass and the virtually transparent curtains on the other side. Case slips off his toboggan, nearly identical to Beat's, and waves his fingers through his silvery blonde hair as he continues to look up, as though contemplating a climbing expedition. "I wish that chimney was wider," he says. "Then we could go down like Nick." "Technically, we still could," Beat glances over to Case. "Yeah, but with a chimney that small, who knows how big the fireplace will be?" "I can't tell," Beat says, looking inside again. Case fits his cap back onto his head. "Let's leave the theatrics to Hoteyosho, then, and just go inside like normal people. She'll invite us in anyway, even if she hasn't already." "Fine by me," Beat replies. "And I see your Japanese is coming along nicely." Case smiles in response. "Madam," he bows and steps aside, waving Beat to the door. Beat rubs her hands together, miming the actions of someone chilled to the bone, although she feels none of the cool November conditions. Case smirks beside her. "Couldn't resist, could you?" he questions, chuckling. He knows she isn't cold. He isn't either. Beat sticks out her tongue at him. "I'd like to give off the impression that I'm actually doing some work," she says as her fingerless glove reaches for the doorknob. On the other side of the door, various locks and jams release with no resistance, as though an invisible entity was unlocking the door from the inside. Even the chain lock frees with seemingly no effort at all, everything happening before Bate's hand meets the doorknob, a movement that can take no longer than a few seconds, although the moment is dramatically drawn out by the girl's slow advance. Someone standing inside watching the door could notice the locks tumbling. Someone standing inside should notice the door opening for a few moments and then closing again in silence, the locks shifting back into place simultaneously with scarcely a rattle. Someone could, someone should, but no one does. No one is watching the door. No one is downstairs. No one notices anything out of the ordinary. Beat and Case move through the front foyer into a short hallway that leads to a kitchen on one side and a staircase on the other. Case progresses to the kitchen, while Beat waits patiently at the bottom of the steps, attempting to detect movement from upstairs. Case assesses the kitchen with a smooth gaze, hesitating just slightly on the dials on top of the gas stove. One dial points to a notch between medium and high, indicating it had been used to make dinner, and then forgotten. Case looks away as the dial snaps back to the off position without him touching it. Finishing his inspection, he steps back into the hallway beside Beat. "She left the stove on," Case comments softly, not disturbing the overriding quiet of the residence. "She has a lot on her mind," Beat replies. Case nods, and the two of them begin their ascension of the stairs. Case's moves are lithe, bringing to mind a jungle cat roving among the sturdy treetop branches of a rainforest. In contrast, Beat dances up the steps, evoking images of a ballerina moving freely and deftly in a dance studio. As they reach the top, they make a sharp left turn and move toward an open door at the end of the hall, their movements without sound, stopping just short of crossing the threshold into a child's room. They stand at the door and look inside. A woman and child lie on a simple bed curled together. The woman, the child's mother, upon hearing the even breaths of slumber coming from the little boy, begins to carefully extricate herself from the limbs of the smaller body. The boy, still asleep, grabs for the stuffed animal lying in front of him and pulls it closer. He sneezes, forehead wrinkling, but doesn't awaken. The pair at the door gaze upon the scene in silence as the mother watches the steady inhalations of her young one. They also watch as she then tilts her head up toward the ceiling, her eyes drawing closed, her face showing signs of exhaustion. "God help me," she breathes. Beat can't help but glance down to the floor, her lips curving into a smile. This is their invitation. A nightlight illuminates the room just enough for the woman to read the face of her wristwatch. She takes a deep breath and exhales slowly, as though gathering herself, before moving to exit the bedroom. Beat and Case separate to either side of the doorway as the mother nears. In respect, the two of them have taken off their hats and are holding them in front of their chests. They know the act will go unacknowledged, yet they follow through just the same. "We'll take it from here," Case whispers as the mother passes. Her stride's slow and her brow furrows. Her steps are softer now as she listens for any sound out of place. The house is quiet, making only those barely perceptible noises that houses tend to do. She then shakes her head, the movement barely there, and continues on. Her steps are more determined. Kay smiles as he and Beat observe the woman's retreating form, making the sharp right to begin descending the stairs. As soon as she is lost around the corner, the two turn back to the child's room. Now they step inside. The bedroom is far from dirty, but there are enough toys and ornamentations to present the area as the space for a young boy. Beat and Case hang their outerwear on a kid-sized coat rack standing near the door. Another coat and scarf already occupy one rung. Beat also removes her flannel-patterned, long-sleeved shirt, leaving her in a sleeveless grey tank top. Her tattoo, a pair of wings inked on the inside of her left wrist, is now visible. Case keeps on his white Henley. It covers an identical tattoo to Beat's, although his is much larger, spanning the entire portion of his back. The sleeping boy sneezes again, the heat emanating from his body. Beat takes up a position near the headboard of the child's bed and stands, head tilted down toward her boots, her eyes closed. Out of nowhere, magnificent wings unfurl from behind her back and extend wide, as though stretching after a deep sleep. Given the small size of the room, they take up nearly the full length from one wall to the opposite. Eyes still shut, she tilts her head from side to side and rolls her shoulders. Slowly, her wings retract into a more comfortable, folded posture behind her back, although they remain splendidly visible. At the same time, the tattoo fades into her skin. Facing the doorway, his back framed by the lone window overlooking the street, Case has undergone a similar transformation. He lifts his head after swaying his wings back and forth before retracting them behind his shoulder blades. He then takes his place at the foot of the bed near the doorway. On the two of them, their wings, framing their now statuesque bodies, radiate an ethereal glow, enhanced by the subdued incandescence given off by the nightlight. "I can do all things," Case chuckles softly, looking straight ahead. Beat smiles as well. They stand ready. And moreover, the child sleeps soundly.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from thirdflatiron.com.